Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 386 of the Roguecast, recorded September 20th, 2022. John Leguizamo's Inner Clown. All right, it's time for another spooky podcast.
I mean, you know, there's going to be some spooky stuff in here.
There will be. There's some trailers for spooky stuff. There's some horror comics this week. It is September.
Yeah, there's no getting out of it.
Spooky dice.
That's true.
Our store's all spookified because Dave and Serena went out and got some. There's a cauldron back here.
Yeah, we have the store is gearing up for Halloween. I guess we should start talking about our cosplayer.
We should. Yeah, we have I need to make a sign and everything for it. We're just waiting on some details, but we have a cosplayer, Lucky Lemon.
Yep.
She's going to come in. It's one of our first public appearances, maybe her first. We're not sure how the order's going to work, but
yeah.
It's going to be Wednesday, October 16th, after hours. We're not sure exactly what we're doing. Maybe a costume contest, maybe some trivia.
Was it the 16th or the 23rd?
That was the 16th, was the last I heard.
All right. I think it's the 23rd.
You told me the 16th.
I don't think that is. I think we're thinking about some different event.
Listeners, stay tuned.
All right, well, we'll get the
date. It is the week before Halloween, as I have said many times.
Okay, well, when I asked you, you said the 16th.
Okay, I don't think that's true.
Maybe you said the 23rd and I messed it all up.
I think you are.
Okay. At any rate, it's the 23rd.
Yeah.
And
even that might not be right.
But maybe the 16th.
But maybe the 16th. No, it's probably the 23rd.
Point is, we're going to have a little costume contest get together and some fun after hours in the store, which we haven't done like a Halloween party in a while.
No.
We're going to do like trivia. Yeah. Like it's not like a big thing, but like, and I think Serena's gonna bring some snacks.
Maybe
gonna
dress up.
We'll see. We'll see.
That's a no, folks. For those listening, no, that's a no. I might wear my Captain America costume for the fourth time this year.
It's a good costume.
Yeah, it's an easy costume. Or my Tenzin costume, although that thing is falling apart.
Oh yeah.
That's been built for me by a friend many years ago, and is probably just about ready to retire. It is a good costume from Legend of Korra. There's not a lot of bald characters, not a bald bearded characters, but Tenzin is one of them.
Yeah, you're halfway there with the likes of Xavier, Luther.
I'm going to propose a new costume for you.
Yep.
Let's do you a Red Guardian, because you got the beard already.
I could do
Red
Guardian.
You do the mask, and it's going to look perfect.
And I got the body for it.
That is just the Captain America. That is just the Captain America of Russia.
Yeah, but he's like the out of shape Captain America. That's even better.
Yeah, but then you get to talk like a Russian David Harbour.
Nick, you may have sold me on this. If I can find a way to do that costume fairly easily, I might do it. That's pretty good. Also, people have said I should do Kratos.
Kratos,
I'm like, I don't think so. I'm bald and have the beard, and that is all that I have in common with. And I hate the gods.
I believe Kratos is known for like Conan posing with like a sword, while beautiful women like sort of hang off of him.
Well, I do like doing that.
So I just want to like point that out. That like any photo op you do is basically that's it.
Oh, Kratos
that's
or Red it. Guardian. That's my only two costumes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Or bearded Xavier.
Or bearded Xavier. Is that like a bearded dragon? Is that
You could also be the genie.
Oh, the genie, yeah. Good call. Yep. I could do genie. All right. Well, none of that's going to happen, but I might dress up. Me dressing up is about as likely as Dave dressing up.
What? You have costumes.
I do. Also, other store news. We have some big restocks this week. We got a big restock on Kobold Press.
Yep, so Kobold Press, who does the third-party D&D stuff with the super high production values and cool settings and all kinds of cool stuff.
So we got their Tome of Beasts, Tome of Beasts 2, and Creature Codex, all their monster manuals. We got the Tome of Heroes, which is their lot of like new character options. We have the Book of Ebon Tides, which is their new thing. We've got Deep Magic, which is their magic book. We got Vault of Magic, their magic items book. Tons of cool D&D stuff. Also, pocket versions of most of those, if you like the small soft covers, and all their guides. They get these all these designers. They do like essays and stuff on ideas behind. So it's like a guide to magic and world building and monsters and all that kind of stuff.
I like that kind of stuff. It's interesting.
So there's a lot of good stuff in the D&D section from Kobold. We got a restock on Pokemon.
So all the Pokemons.
We got all the Pokemons, including the newest one, Lost Souls. We got those packs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and these packs that have a weird shape.
Yeah, we've got the short-lived supply of the Pokemon Go tins and the Pokeball tins.
Yep, and you know, last time we had Pokemon stuff and it went pretty quick. That's why we do have the, and we'll probably be a little more enforcey on than we have been at times, the five boosters right. max per set, I guess. Yep.
So if you got kids who want Pokemon, we try to hang on to it.
We're trying to hold on to it for the kids. We're trying to not let the people who are hoarding it and reselling it do that.
Well, we actually don't have the boxes. Right. Like they normally come. These are the ones that usually, like, Target gets. Yeah. That have, like, the little peg hole and stuff.
Yeah. But we got some Pokemon stuff.
Yeah, enough Pokemon.
We went from having literally only one set yesterday to having...
Full stock.
Like, solid full stock.
There's some benefits to having 100 different distributors.
Tomorrow we will have nothing.
I mean, that's possible.
No, Nick, tomorrow 6 more orders from 6 other distributors will come in.
Tomorrow I will not be here.
We also got a stock from Foam Brain Dice. They got some new inclusion dice, including a basketball and a soccer ball, which is kind of cool. But notably, we got some earrings from them, little stud earrings of like D20s, they have little fireballs.
Icons for D&D. You know, like a little bow if you know you play a ranger. There's sword. There's a sword and
potions.
Like it's pretty cool.
Is
sounding.
There a beholder?
No, but not if, there, if they make yet. One, we'll get one. We got a little sampling of their stuff, and it's pretty cool. And then we also got. Halloween blind bags of dice. They're trick or treat bags.
Yep.
Because you get a metal D20 that's got Halloween colors and like a monster of some kind on the 20, and you get a little pin of various monsters in Halloween costumes.
That's awesome.
So it's like
the mystery bags have done well for us in general, but the fact that these are like especially Halloweeny ones makes them super cool right now. Cool gifts for your DM and or players and or friends. As the spooky season is upon us.
And these are brand new from them, right?
Brand
because
new.
The last Halloween ones was really awesome.
They went out of print.
Because the pin like had the beholder and all the beholder's eyes had witch's hats.
And this is similar. It's all D&D monsters in costumes.
That's so cool. Idea. I love it.
They're $18 a piece, which means if you're super rich, you can buy them and get them out for trick-or-treats.
That's crazy. I mean...
What's the point of being super rich? Like, are you just going to do vanity... penis rockets to the stars, or are you going to give kids cool trick or treats?
I will say that I live in a subdivision, and apparently a house does a golden ticket rule, and last year if you got the golden ticket out of their bars, you got a Switch.
Oh my god.
I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
That's quite the neighborhood to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought full-size candy bars were a good deal, but that's way better.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about, just to double-check, you're talking about Switch from the Matrix.
Yes.
They found a way to bring her back. And she will go and have adventures with you.
She will become your slave.
Oh, well, no. Let's rewind that.
Look, they're rich people. They just do what they want.
She was the one all in white, right?
Yes.
What's that? Yeah.
She was the one that
what's his name, pulled the plug on?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
She had cool twin pistols.
Who was that? Cypher?
Cypher.
Yeah, okay.
Like Louis Cypher. Like Lucifer. Get it?
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, but you're referencing a good movie.
I am. actually referencing two good movies because I think Angel Heart was also a good movie.
Well, that's what I was talking about. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about The Matrix.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that was probably a reference within a reference, maybe.
I figured it was a reference.
Yeah.
Anyway. but, yes, I want to trick-or-treat in Nick's neighborhood.
I'm
going to recruit an army of kids. I'll pay them each a candy bar. And all I'll ask is that golden ticket.
Don't you have a Switch? I mean...
Yes, and I don't even need a Switch, but it's the principal thing.
It's a heist,
Nick. I want to run a Halloween heist.
Is this like a Dickensian urchin gang?
It is. I'm going to be the Artful Dodger.
Neat.
Yeah.
All right, I'm in.
Has there ever been a Halloween heist kind of thing?
I mean, Brooklyn Nine-Nine did it every year.
I mean, yeah, that's true. But that was...
What do you mean, guys? A Halloween heist? Just a heist that occurs on Halloween or some movie about, like, goblins and stuff doing a heist?
Dracula, Frankenstein, and the Wolfman pulling a heist on a casino.
I mean, I've watched the...
Guys, we're on the podcast. I gotta write this script right now.
I would totally watch that. Sounds like something Chip Zdarsky would have written
ago. It does, yeah. It's the flip side of Monster Cops. Yeah.
But it has to be, like, a hellish afterlife casino.
Monster heist, Monster Cops.
It just writes itself, honestly. And then also we got other stuff. We got Transformers Rising Darkness, which is the new Transformers deck building expansion.
Yeah, expansion.
We got the Parks Wildlife expansion. Mm-hmm. Parks is a great game that we all really like.
Yep.
We got Firefly Misbehavin', which is a deck builder from the people who made the Firefly board game.
It's very heavy. It looks cool.
It looks cool. And then we got Demogorgon, not the Stranger Things Demogorgon, but the OG,
the real Demogorgon,
monkey god demon Demogorgon,
the real one that people who play in D&D and are Satan worshippers worship.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Who else do you worship?
All hail Demogorgon.
I mean, who else could you worship? Baelor demons, Beelzebub, Asmodeus,
Orcus.
D&D gives you a plethora of choices for your satanic needs.
Do you
needs.
Worship Tiamat, or do you just get killed by
no,
it?
No, you worship Tiamat. Dragons worship Tiamat, right?
Yes.
Evil dragons.
Yeah.
Did we talk about
you
the plushies?
You can worship him as
got?
A human, but it's frowned upon.
We did not talk about the plushies.
I couldn't remember if we had or not.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking
yeah.
of, there's yeah, a Demogorgon happened, over there as well.
Yeah. That happened, like, on a day while I was away, and I just walked in, and there was, like, a delightful D&D plush toy.
Yeah, there's, like, goblins and kobolds
and dragons.
Dragons.
And, yeah, and there's even a Harrigan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Rabbit Men.
The Rabbit
Men. For those who don't know.
Also, Orcus reminded me, we have a Wand of Orcus.
We do.
We hung one up at the back, by the, if you want to see what it looks like.
Yep.
And we have one for sale.
Yeah. You can look in the back by the owlbear head.
By the owlbear head. But yeah, if you want something super cool for your game room, we have one of those.
Sure.
Again, if you're super rich and you're just going to give away...
Switches
for Halloween. Why not buy a Wand of Orcus?
You get one Snickers mini bar and one Switch
Who's
and one Wand of Orcus.
Who's to say that on Halloween the Wand of Orcus doesn't actually work?
It's true. Why? We're all excited for Halloween.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of Halloween stuff. That we have some trailers that are Halloween themed.
Yeah.
So the Hellraiser movie is coming to Hulu.
Right.
Is it a movie or is it a series?
It's a movie.
Okay.
I thought.
For some reason, I thought it was a series.
Nick, why don't you quick look that up while we're talking?
I'll look.
Because there's also one thing I don't know is if this is a sequel of sorts. Like, does it take into account the history of the various Hellraiser movies? Or is it a reimagining?
It looks like a reimagining.
I know that Pinhead in it, who is traditionally a male role, is played by a woman in this.
It's woke Hellraiser.
That torturing is so woke. Yeah, no, I'm somewhat neither here nor there, but I think the director has a good pedigree.
The director did The Ritual and The Night House, which we're going to talk about in the topics, yep. And both really good movies.
Yep, I have not seen them.
That has me interested. I have to say, the trailer doesn't.
The best part about the trailer, I thought, was the first, 20 seconds or so, mm-hmm. where there's a guy showing off, you know, as if you were taking somebody into a private room in a museum and saying, oh, would you like to look at this artifact? Yeah. Oh, yes, you can even hold it or whatever. And
it's like a puzzle. It's the cube.
Right. And the guy who's holding it, what does he say? Does it...
he's like, if I solve it, do I get a prize? And the guy's like, I do.
Yeah. And that part was kind of cool.
Yeah. I imagine that means like he's trading his soul. He's like, he's not going to be tortured, but you'll be tortured. Now.
Yep. Yep. Something like
See,
that.
You're right. I was wrong. It's a movie.
Well, I figured it was the director of movies. He probably was doing a movie, but...
Yeah.
It looks very torturific, and I'm not sure I'm going to be into it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, the original Hellraiser does look like that, too, and... in some ways was that,
yeah,
but also had a pretty good story.
Okay.
The Cenobites lore and all that stuff, the slow reforming of that one guy who was like dead and comes back as like a living muscle tissue and then like slowly builds up more, but still has like sex with his girlfriend who's helping resurrect him while he's like muscle tissue man.
Yeah.
That's some Clive Barker weirdness.
I had a lot of the McFarlane Cenobite action figures.
Oh, did you?
They were weird.
Well, there was some pretty great design work.
Yeah, oh, very much so.
You know, the kind of stuff that you would kind of, I would tend to associate a little bit more with, like, video game design mm-hmm. characters, where it's like, lots of very specific little details on them.
Honestly, the design of Pinhead alone was very,
yeah.
very cool.
Yeah. And, yeah, and of course, yes, this is like all came out of like elements that I think that were in that original story from Clive Barker, but that it's like, you know, it's like it took the sort of S&M sort of scene
mm-hmm.
and transferred that to like these horrific things, you know, took... fun bondage and turned it into torture bondage.
Can I admit I've never been a huge Clive Barker fan? Like, I've tried so much of his stuff. I tried his 90s. He was coming up in the 90s when I was like, he was becoming a thing, and like, I saw Nightbreed. I tried reading one of the Books of Blood. I read some of his Barkerverse stuff from Marvel. Like,
yeah.
I've never quite lined up with
his stuff. I didn't quite
fall
into it either. I think he, I don't know that I've ever been fully enthralled. Nick?
I think I tried a couple of his books. I know I read, because isn't Imaginica,
yep.
like a trilogy, though?
Yeah. Probably so. I had
I
a friend
like
who
I read
was so into
one,
that book.
Which, I mean, it was good, and I watched Hellraiser. And
that was his kind of, like, fantasy type thing, right?
Yeah. But I never plugged into him completely, I think.
I think he was, like, a good and, like, counterpoint to Stephen King, who had that slightly... there actually is always a sort of a sense of Vin King's books of, it's one of the things that I like about him, of being a little bit on the side of the protagonist.
Yes.
That it is not, and Barker was crueler, you know? It was a darker, less happy universe, more sexual universe, more LGBT universe.
Yeah.
It was, you know, that he broke a lot of boundaries that needed to be broken, I think, and honestly, I can't say that I ever quite gave him a fair shot. I just didn't quite feel like I was plugging in and didn't pursue it. But I think he was a good voice to have in.
I agree. It's not one of my thing. But the only reason that I'm excited about it, though,
that director
is that director, because both of the movies that director's done have been great.
Remind me the director.
The guy who did Night House and The Ritual.
Oh, okay, cool.
What's his name, Randy?
His name is Mr. Ritual.
Terrence. Richardson.
That guy. His name is David Bruckner, I think.
Okay.
All right.
It might be. That might be right.
No, that actually sounds right.
I think that's right. I looked it up recently.
Flanagan, just as a quick reminder, we've talked about it plenty of times.
Something else I looked
you guys
up.
Are probably going to folks are probably going to invest for the his liar Netflix shows. So,
please don't be a truther.
Flying Manor.
That's a different thing.
Midnight Mass.
Let's jump over to Midnight Club, the other trailer, which is Mike Flanagan, which I think we all adore Mike Flanagan.
Not the Murders in the Rue Morgue. What's the Poe one?
Oh, House of Usher?
Yeah, The Fall of the House of Usher. Yeah, he will often take as inspiration a lot of these classic kind of gothic ghost stories, build them out into like kind of big character ensembles, which can be both very scary and very emotionally involving. I would say a lot. You know, I've had friends who've gotten into this who are not horror fans, but because of the character depth and the detail and the great stories, they get pulled in.
He usually brings along his troupe of actors that he's slowly amassing.
Yep, he's and he. In film, what did he do? He's adapted a few Stephen King things. He did Gerald's Game. He did the Dr. Sleep. He somehow made a good Ouija movie, the second one.
Yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Mike Flanagan. He is producing, directing. Is this one of his things? Okay, yeah, so this is like he's fully involved
yep,
in this.
Yep.
And are these from some YA novels, I want to say?
I think that is right.
This
yes.
is, I believe, a single YA novel or...
Maybe I kind of thought it was a series,
I don't know.
But I actually have no idea. We should ask Serena after this because she's read this stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, so let's talk about what the trailer shows. This is kind of a dark premise. Some kids who are in a hospice.
They're all dying of various things.
Yeah, and is it like in a kind of spooky mansion or institution
or
something?
It seems like a spooky mansion, yes.
Yeah, and...
They have like some ritual where they go downstairs and tell spooky stories, but it seems like there may be ghosts.
Right, like this may not just be just telling stories, they might in some way be interacting with actual supernatural stuff.
Yep.
I don't know any of the details, and I honestly don't want to until I get them in context. But, man, it was a pretty good trailer. I got the vibe of the stuff that I like about Mike Flanagan, which was the character hook and the sort of emotional content.
Mm-hmm.
And they played that song from Possum Kingdom.
Yep, Do You Want to Die?
Yep.
Which is not the name of the song, but it should be.
It should be. Is that song just called Possum Kingdom, which is also the name of the album?
It is. What's the band's name? The Toadies?
Yes. That is exactly right.
The Toadies, Do You Want to Die, Possum... Do You Want to Die by Do You Want to Die on the Do You Not Do You Want to Die album.
Like Big Country?
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, there's a... they play that and also do a sort of a distorted, eerie version, eerier version
yes.
of it. And at the same time, there was, like, creepy spectral ghost images, stuff I didn't know exactly what was going on, but looked scary, especially that last shot. I was like, man, that's cool. Again, that is a good special effect.
Heather Langenkamp. Is the main doctor.
Who is it?
Heather Langenkamp.
She was the girl from Nightmare on Elm Street, the original.
She played the original.
And okay. and that, right. like, you know, I guess she's kind of like Scream Queen royalty at that point.
She is.
But, like, I'm also, that's, honestly, it's almost a slight market against it. I would just, I'd rather see his troupe of actors or just good people. I don't know that I ever thought, oh, what an amazing actress.
I thought she was really good in New Nightmare.
That is, like, I remember her being solid.
I don't think she's a bad actress at all. And I feel like, given the right script and Flanagan's direction, I think anybody could be good.
Yeah. But she's just not an immediate, like, oh, wow, that's cool. But I assume that was kind of why she was cast, is her sort of somewhat iconic status.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like the horror connection, so I think it was a nice, fun nod.
What was I going to say? Something about her. Oh, yeah, new Nightmare, though. Although I believe we've discussed it before, if you by chance haven't seen it, even if you only sort of know the Nightmare on Elm Street movies by reputation, that's the kind of cool one where Freddy emerges in the real world while they are making a Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Yeah.
And it's got some clever stuff in it. It is a pretty cool...
It's got a bit of commentary, but...
Yeah, when you've kind of run the gamut on, Freddy kills people in horrible ways and makes jokes, when you've kind of done all of those movies you can, that was a cool capper to it.
It was.
Anyway... we're all looking forward to this, right?
What's it
called? Yeah. Midnight. What is it?
Midnight Club.
And when is it hitting? It's
October
7th. Right? Yeah, it's soon.
So that's what, 2 weeks away? No.
It's the same day that the Halloween special of
that's
going
to be a good day.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks from this Friday.
I wonder if Netflix is going to do one a week.
That's what I was talking about.
Well, they just, I know this is a weird one, but they usually put all of. I know you guys don't watch the Great British Baking Show.
I do not.
I do. And they're starting this season to only do one a week.
I know people are excited about that. That's smart. I actually think that's smart.
I was kind of apprehensive because I do like to binge at times, but I was talking with my wife a little about it, and we're like, there's so much television right now, it actually helps things.
Yeah.
Not only just with scheduling, but also it kind of allows the show to breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, that has always been my argument. And, you know, I don't like binging as much. So that's, you know, that's just me.
But prefer purging.
I prefer the movie The Purge.
Yes. What I meant, watching the movie The Purge.
Yes. I like the time to, for there to be an episode of, Rings of Power or whatever it is, She-Hulk, whatever. I like to be able to watch it, discuss that episode, then move on to the next one, and not have, vaguely talk about the season, which I've already forgotten bits and pieces from with
people. I get that. And the thing is, as an impatient person, I love myself a good binge. Mm-hmm. But as a consumer of entertainment, I think, it's probably better to have it weekly. I think that anticipation. Now, I do think that maybe there's a balance to be had. I think Amazon sort of found it with the three episodes and then weekly.
Hulu does the same thing.
I think that's the way... most shows... One pilot is hard for anyone.
It is.
And I feel like giving somebody
three episodes seems like a bit much.
Do you think?
I think two.
I see. You're stingy.
So what you're saying is you're not looking forward to the 3 hours of Andor we're going to get.
I'm not
Wednesday.
Looking forward to the 3 hours of Andor either, honestly. That's too much.
Yeah, it's too
I mean,
much.
One episode of Rings of Power is 90 minutes.
Look, three episodes of She-Hulk, I'd be all for. Three episodes of Andor, I don't want.
Those have been short. Last one was only 24 minutes.
I know, and there was no end tag. We'll talk about that. We're gonna,
also,
we're
by the way, Lord of the Rings is where you're allowed to be epic and
it's
later.
You're allowed to be super long.
That's what it does.
It's true.
There's gonna be it's weird if you don't do it.
There's going to be a director's cut where every episode is actually 2 hours long. all right. Other than trailers, there's some other interesting news. Interesting in the Chinese curse sense in some ways. Gran Turismo. The Gran Turismo movie. This is a video game about driving cars.
Yeah.
Known for its sort of super accuracy of cars.
Right. There's stock cars, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it had real everything
real world
from
physics.
Shocks. And you could basically...
Brake pads, alignment... Yeah. Every aspect of the car was adjustable, and I believe you could probably, especially as the series went along, adjust all the colors, marking, advertising tags. It was a big thing, I think, that they had lots of sort of real world sponsors.
I remember being
that.
Very excited for it when it originally came out. Some part of me got into that briefly, and then I was repulsed by the actual game. I was like, "This is boring."
Now, yes, it required you to actually know how to drive those and do not video game drafting, but actual drafting.
I think I got frustrated by its realism and hyper realism in a lot of ways.
Well. The thing is, I think we would all argue that video games can be art. There's stories, story driven. You guys were talking about Metal Gear.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Gran Turismo doesn't have a story. Gran Turismo is just a driving game.
Just a racing game.
That's correct.
So they're going to make a movie on it, directed by Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9 and Chappie. And didn't he also do that one that Matt Damon's space?
Elysium.
Yeah.
I have disliked most of his movies.
I like moments of his movies.
Except
for
the one I didn't see.
The closest he got for me was his first, his breakout
District
one, Nine. District 9.
Yeah.
Which, has some sort of heavy-handed sort of metaphors for the, at least message-wise, I'm on board with, which was about like sort of what displaced populations and stuff like that.
Look, all three of these movies look great in theory.
These aliens kind of became a stand-in for what immigrants.
Yeah.
And I was like, I miss the fun of my own heavy-handed immigrant aliens, Alien Nation. Mm-hmm. That was a much better movie.
But Blomkamp, none of his movies have done anything for me. And so him doing Gran Turismo, I mean, first, that's fine.
He has somehow always kept people, I think because people broadly liked District 9, it was at least had some ambition, mm-hmm. you know, even though it was kind of clunky about it. So that when there was that word out that he had wanted to do the next Aliens movie, right. And that it hadn't happened, and people were like, oh, it would have been the most amazing thing in the world, and I was like, would it?
Well, it would have been just forgettable.
Well, yeah. We'll never know, but we are going to know what his Gran Turismo looks like, maybe, and it's going to have David Harbour in it, and I was really, like, I don't care what Neil Blomkamp does, because I wasn't going to see it anyway, but what a waste of David Harbour.
Free the David Harbour.
But you have to realize, David Harbour is just doing anything he wants now. He will choose whatever.
He needs us to be his agent for him.
Do you think that he's super into cars? Like, why would you do this?
Was he super into Hellboy? I don't know. He was in the Hellboy movie that disappeared.
He was super into Hellboy.
Super fast.
Yeah, I heard it was terrible.
It wasn't great, but I liked it. I'm just as kind of a
thing. You're saying you hit play on it?
Uh-huh.
I hit play, and I enjoyed it. I had a good time.
All right.
You know what, David Harbour, the other day, I saw him talking about... What has he got coming up? Does he have something coming up?
Thunderbolts? He's going to be in Thunderbolts.
I guess it was probably Thunderbolts. And he was using a metaphor that I assume he must have picked up on the set of Stranger Things. He used a D&D metaphor.
Okay.
He was saying, he's like, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, how the party gets together in a tavern and he's like, was being real specific with it. He's like, you've got the crusty dwarf over in the corner drinking, and he's got the elf over. And I think his point was like, there was something about like the recruiting's fun of like the oddballs of the Thunderbolts. But I was like, that is just wild that David Harbour made this very elaborate D&D metaphor.
Do you think
to
it's possible, Dave, that he wasn't having an interview? He thought he was running a game.
So
was describing the tactic.
I have to break in our conversation because I looked up David Harbour and just kind of humorously was like, okay, what's he doing other than Thunderbolts?
Yep.
He has a movie coming out called Violent Night.
Okay. Where he plays Santa.
Where he plays Santa. And the description is an elite team of mercenaries breaks into a family compound on Christmas Eve, taking everyone hostage inside. However, they aren't prepared for a surprise combatant. Santa Claus is on the grounds, and he's about to show why this Nick is no saint.
Yes, I saw that. I'm absolutely 100% going to watch that. Yeah. It's going to be awful.
It's going to be awful, but I am going to watch it as well.
I am not going to watch that.
Has John Leguizamo in it?
Not helping.
I like John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo was also the clown in Spawn, so you can't use him as an example of anything.
But
he was also
the awesome person in Executive Decision.
I was, and semi-recently, as in like 3-4 years ago, he was did a really good supporting role in that movie, or that miniseries, Waco.
Leguizamo is a very good actor, has been in a lot of good things, but also, he was the clown in Spawn, and therefore you can't trust him.
I'm just saying, that's David Harbour is like me, he presses play, so he's just going to press play on whatever he's offered.
When you say you can't trust him, what you mean is some small part of Spawn's clown is always with him, and you never know when he might clown out.
I meant more that you couldn't trust him to be an arbiter of good movies, but also that.
Yeah, you know that. The clown is with him.
I just want our listenership to email us with suggestions on what the Gran Turismo movie is actually going to be about.
Yeah, what the hell?
What are your best theories on it? And also, do you remember the 1990s? That was the era of it. The thing is, you know, when they started talking about doing like a Twisted Metal thing, there's going to be like a Twisted Metal TV
show. That's going to be good.
And, like, that had, like, actual...
That's not going to be good. How is that going to be good?
No, it had good people associated with it.
The cast is amazing, and the
director is
good.
Somebody.
Like,
is it?
Yeah.
Also, by the way, Twisted Metal at least had a kind of a fun anarchic premise of being... You know, it was like Road Warrior on, like, by way of Crank.
Well, and their pitch for it is it's like they've got a... They're in a car, and they've got to escape all these crazy post-apocalyptic things to get somewhere. Like, they gave a plot summary that made sense.
Right. So there was basically at this point there was enough stuff there.
Do you know what Gran Turismo is about? I know it. I know what it's about. This is a real life story of some kid who got so good at Gran Turismo he became a real life race car driver.
Oh, I think
that's
I do
what this
movie's
gonna be. So this may be like weird inspirational thing.
So this is like, what was that Fred Savage movie about? Is like
The Wizard?
The Wizard.
I don't think it's like The Wizard. No, I don't think it's like that at all. No.
You know, at that point, I'm going to go ahead and root for it to be like The Wizard. Randy, I think you might have hit on it, though. I think it is probably going to be a kind of a warm-hearted, inspirational movie about how this video game inspired this kid to greatness or whatever.
You know the most recent movie about the military guy who has a dog that was with, what's his name, Channing Tatum?
Yeah.
It was called The Dog, I think.
Something like that.
This is going to be like that, but with cars.
Yeah. So David Harbour is going to be like the guy who probably teaches the kid racing.
Yeah.
And you know what I bet David Harbour? I bet he was a great race car driver, or almost was, and had a career-ending injury or got into drinking or something like that.
Yeah, I think we've nailed it here.
And he's going to, through the kid, he will redeem himself.
Oh, God, what if this movie's good? And then we got to take all this back.
It's not going to be good.
Listen, no. I will not surrender my pride like that.
It's the director of The Passage. It was like a horror movie. Okay. That was solid.
Okay.
But I saw that...
when Nick says solid...
He means you press play.
I see that Gob is going to do the voice of the clown in it, which is Will Arnett.
Oh, you're talking about Twisted Metal now.
Yes. I'm not Gran Turismo.
That jumped quite a bit.
It did.
I was like, with a clown in Gran Turismo?
Why not? Right?
John Leguizamo's doing the cast of the clown in Gran Turismo. Anyway, we're way
what
off
are we
track
talking
here.
About? Yes.
I don't even
Let's
know.
Move on to the next topic. Gran Which Turismo is something to be avoided, but if you have any excitement for it, good luck.
Look, all our news from here on in is nuts. I should say, rather about this is all we're living in
so
weird
strap
2022.
Strap in, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, strap in. Constantine 2 is coming.
Right, and you mean not like the many incarnations that of from cartoons?
No, not the
recent WB version.
Not the Matt Ryan Constantine series that they were promising they might do a season two of.
But
no,
the Joanna Constantine,
yeah.
Constantine,
right? Yeah. But Keanu Reeves from what late '90s
yep,
or early 2000s,
wielding a holy shotgun.
Yep, action Constantine.
Yep, is getting a sequel.
Yep, it sort of fits because WB has lost all control over like DC movies as any having any sort of cohesion. So yeah, like if they, I guess Keanu must have wanted to return to the character, and they're like, we would like to have any association with Keanu Reeves.
This feels like somebody lost a cocaine fueled bet.
But you know what? I know a lot of people who've liked the movie.
Yeah.
At the time, it was kind of pilloried in the comics community because he was not an Englishman.
He's not British. He doesn't smoke.
He did smoke.
He did smoke. Well, he was trying to quit, and he was chewing Nick.
But they did
it until the very end.
They literally did, though. I mean, like, it adapts the story where Constantine gets
cancer.
It adapts Garth Ennis' story.
It adapted a lot of that first Jamie McKelvey stuff.
Jamie Delano.
Jamie Delano.
Yeah. Anyway, it's, you know, the people who are excited about it are kind of excited about it. I don't particularly follow Keanu Reeves' movies. He seems like a good person, but I don't like John Wick. And so I'm like, sure, and instead of doing another John Wick, go do another movie I don't care about.
He can do both.
I suspect he can do both.
This is weird. This is
Nick,
so weird.
Nick, you going to watch it? You going to press
sure.
play?
I've watched the original one in the theaters. I've occasionally returned to it.
I saw the original once.
I believe I rented it on a Netflix rental DVD.
Yeah, I think that's how I said
those times.
It's got a great cast.
Is there Rachel Weisz?
There's like Tilda Swinton as the
There's no way they're all gonna
Angel
to this,
and
could be
Pimp My Alto.
I actually
as Lucifer.
But I don't.
They have playing Chaz. It was like Shia LaBeouf.
It was Shia LaBeouf.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's bad.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Man. That
and I thought Rachel
weird.
Weisz was really good in it.
I remember that nothing about the movie. I remember
really.
Me neither. I remember him firing a shotgun at some point.
Yeah, he jumps through some water.
And a few scenes taken from Garth Ennis' run.
Yeah. Anyway, Constantine 2. If you're excited, congratulations.
Good job. Good luck. Best of luck to you.
This section of the podcast brought to you by congratulations if you enjoy this.
Yeah. Star Wars, The Acolyte, the High Republic era thing they're going to doing.
Yeah.
Yes. High Republic being the kind of newly defined era that was between what the old Republic and the modern sort of rebellion.
It's like the height of the Jedi.
Right, everything was great. So how is there even a story?
Well, I don't know, but Manny Jacinto is going to be in it. If you know The Good Place, He played
He's
Jason Mendoza.
If he doesn't shout Bortles, I'm going to riot.
This is funny because he's good. He was also in that show on Hulu with Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, he was good in that.
He's a good actor. I think he's gotten pigeonholed playing because he was so good as Jason.
Playing a doofus. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I'm excited for him to be in whatever, but mostly I'm excited about all the Good Place Star Wars memes we're going to get.
It's true. I'm curious.
Is this live action?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that to get potentially on board this, Star Wars could potentially hook me into all kinds of things.
Yeah, like it's going to, Andor might hook you?
I'm probably going to, I mean, you know, 3 episodes is too many, but I'll still watch them as best I can. If anything's going to get me into the High Republic, it'd be a live action show, probably.
Yeah.
And I've liked all their
like
live
the
action stuff.
I like the concept of what they've done in the comics, but I've never really been, like, grabbed by it. The whole sort of citadel at the center of the galaxy.
I don't know what those concepts are.
Too many Jedi's.
Yeah, but you don't like Jedi.
I don't like Jedi. I like scoundrels. I like scoundrels.
It is true. Like one of the problems with the prequels was not enough scoundrel.
Yeah.
And there were
not
really
enough scoundrel. Too many council meetings.
Too many council meetings. Yeah. That said, I liked some of the comics and stuff they did where, you know, they'd just be Jedi Knights going off on missions and having adventures.
Yeah.
And I assume that that must still be happening. Though this is a peak era, I assume that every once in a while someone robs a space convenience store and they're like,
yes.
Jedi, get them.
Completely.
Yes.
Or whatever happens. Yeah. What's the Citadel thing, Nick?
I mean, it's something akin to, like, the Mass Effect Citadel, where sort of like a beacon of Jedi, I don't know. It's basically their place where they've gathered. They're, like, gonna... They're not space cops, but sort of like that.
Jedi convention.
They're knights.
They're knights. And they go out on missions and help people, and this is sort of where they meet. I don't know. It was a cool idea. We'll see if the live action can be more exciting.
And then, finally, Blade Runner 2099 series coming to Amazon Prime. That's they keep advancing it, because I think the original was 2019.
And then 2049.
And then 2049. And now 2099.
In which all people are beings of pure energy.
Yep.
And the replicants are beings of a slightly different kind of pure energy.
Yes. slightly less pure. The comics have done 2029, and they're about to do 2039, so they're covering a lot of different ground.
It's weird for me to actually bother to jump ahead, because I kind of think that, like, Blade Runner needs to feel a little close to our time. I don't want it to be too weird and cyberpunky. So I would rather, like, you know... go ahead and stick around in 2049 or shortly
thereafter.
Are they
going to rehire Jared Leto?
Probably not. I don't think anybody's going to rehire Jared Leto.
He's going to go the way of Ezra Miller?
Probably. But, I don't know, I'm excited about the notion of a series. I liked Blade Runner 2049. Don't ask me what happened in it, because I watched it and liked it and immediately forgot it.
Oh, really?
I've seen it twice and forgotten it twice.
I've seen it twice and I've liked it more and more each time I watch it.
But I do want to rewatch it because
really
I
like
it.
I'm curious to try out the anime at some point.
Yeah, me too. It's not streaming anywhere. It's like you have to have whatever premium service it is.
Is it a Crunchyroll or something?
It's like Crunchyroll or something, yeah. I went looking for it because I was watching the Cyberpunk anime, which just started on Netflix, and I was like, I don't like this. It's too anime. But I wanted to see the Blade Runner one, which is made by the Cowboy Bebop guy.
Yep.
And I went to look for it, and you can only get it if you have, like, Hulu Plus Live TV. It's just, it's like a sci-fi channel or one of those. Yeah.
But I think we'd all agree the comics,
comics
showed that there's potential. Like, I haven't liked every miniseries they've done for the Blade Runner comics, but several of them have been like, oh, this actually kind of gets the tone down, has, you know, it tells different enough stories, but, you know, with some of the same thematics. Mm-hmm. To be doing a good job with the property in a way that I just didn't really think was ever going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'll leave the door open for that one, even though that seems a little too futury to me.
Yeah.
We're not talking Star Trek stuff, I'm sure, but let's get to the off-world colonies.
But also, the other thing that makes me nervous is Ridley Scott's involved, and I feel like Ridley Scott has not been doing a lot of good stuff lately.
The Martian. He did The Martian. Don't forget The Martian.
All right, he did The Martian. Yes.
I know that was a decade ago or something.
It was good.
I haven't seen The Last Duel.
It's good. Worth
watching. Is that the medieval thing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to see that.
It was actually very good.
Okay, all right. That's our news. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about comics for the week. We We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, September 21st. And I think let's start with the thing we're all excited for, which is Deceased War of the Undead Gods number 2. It's good to have another Deceased series. This one's 8 issues. Most usually are like 6, I think.
Right.
Yep. Reminder, there have been like 4 or 5 different Deceased miniseries. Right. It's DC's zombie thing. And the kind of neat thing about their premise was that it was like their zombie plague was based in the anti-life equation that Darkseid is always after.
Yep.
So it's like, if you were to try and tell me that, like, if just a normal zombie bit Darkseid or something like that, I'd be like, the zombie will be incinerated and Darkseid will not even flinch. But the anti-life equation is, like, power beyond all power. So, yes, that could infect him, and that's exactly what's happened.
Yep.
Things are falling into chaos, and it, like, it goes into, like, the playground becomes very fun in this one.
We've had deaths, we've had revivals, and now we have gods.
Yeah, the second one, without giving too much away, the second one sort of turned the zombie thing on its head.
Yep.
And then this one turns it back over, sort of the basically, like,
Sinestro shows up in it, the Sinestro core, and the entire war world that is, like, their, like,
base of operations,
and they, like, bring that to bear in it. So, like, you can know this is going to be big stuff.
Yeah, well,
it has the Black Racer in it, too, the Harbinger of Death.
It's Darkseid leading basically all the not just the people from the Apocalypse, but
he took over
New Genesis. It's like all the new gods as zombies under the control of Darkseid and at the will of the anti-life equation. Yeah.
While the heroes debate whether they are willing to cut a deal with world-destroying Brainiac.
Yeah. Yeah,
that who might be one of the few people who could challenge Darkseid.
Some of the best Guy Gardner dialogue I've read in a while.
Great Guy Gardner dialogue.
Yeah.
There's always the great Tom Taylor moments, but there's also, like, he is not taking prisoners here. He is definitely playing it pretty dark.
Guy Gardner, kind of like Johnny on Cobra Kai, is able to be, like, a D-bag and actually still be funny about it.
Yep.
So there's a part where they're, like, when they're considering working with Brainiac, he's like, man, I'm not a big fan of cancel culture. He's like, but I think the genocidal guy who just devours worlds, maybe we shouldn't team up with him or whatever. But yeah, he gets to be a smartass throughout a whole lot of it, and it's clear Tom Taylor's having a lot of fun writing it.
And this has one of those great last pages of, like, oh, well, that's not good.
Yeah, that last page was spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super good. Really liking it. Also, worth
kind of makes me want Tom Taylor to take over on a Green Lantern book at some point.
I want Tom Taylor to fire that up. Because also Nightwing has the finale of a big story arc this week.
Yep,
it was really, really good, and
it's kind of a final showdown with Blockbuster.
Yep,
Who, as you know, is like that's his big bet.
Yep. Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman have a new book.
That is basically the team of Venom for several years, as well as like some Carnage miniseries and stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah, if you like Venom and Carnage, you're gonna like this book.
Yeah.
This is called Vanish. And it is, I believe the pitch that he gave was like, what if
magic was metal?
What if magic was metal? And they're all like superheroes and supervillains. It feels very influenced by like Spawn and that kind of stuff.
I was going to say, this is 90s death metal in comic book form.
What if you had some like, but there's like little elements of like Harry Potter in there, but all kind of like as lens through an R rating and burnout characters and stuff
and
like that.
Superhero, supervillain.
Yeah, I think if you like most of Donny Cates' work, you'll probably dig this. If you like Robert Kirkman's superhero stuff, you'll probably like this. It's this weird mix of superhero and Mark Miller, for sure. it's definitely, it's big metal superheroes.
Yep.
Kids
I will say, Stegman does a good job designing the character. I thought it was a fun design.
Yeah. There's a Harley Quinn special with many covers. It's the 30th anniversary, so it's, I think there's like 10 stories in here by a variety of creators who've worked on her.
Lots of great covers, by the way. This one happened to come with like 10 different covers, which is a little frustrating for us to try and figure out a way to display. But they look really neat,
and you
can pick your own cool
cover. Stephen Sedgwick does a.
Yep, there's a Sedgwick story. There's Raphael Albuquerque story. There's a Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti writing. No Amanda Connor art, unfortunately. Paul Dini and Gillian March, who did the Gotham City Sirens, was also big giant hardcover omnibus of that this week.
Highly recommend that.
Gotham City Sirens was basically like what Harley, Ivy, Catwoman adventures,
and then throw Riddler in there for a little bit of time.
Nice,
was cool.
Then you got Terry Dodson in there who did the original Harley Quinn series.
Yep,
Erica Henderson from Squirrel Girl, Dan Hipp who did the Teen Titans Go designs.
Nice.
There's a ton of good art in this. So yeah, if you like Harley Quinn, it's a good anthology book to read. Boom has Stuff of Nightmares, a original series from R.L. Stine of Goosebumps fame. And this is not a kids' book. This is a like grown up horror book.
Like it's Fear Street.
Like it's Fear Street. Yeah, it's very kid. Yeah. And this has a little bit like of a Frankenstein kind of vibe, as a horror story about people bringing people back from the dead.
No, you're not supposed to do that.
No, you're really not.
It doesn't go well for anybody.
Does it? But I thought it was good, and I love the artwork in there.
I need to check that out. I didn't get around to it. I read the Creepshow,
which is
the next thing on the list. Yeah,
And I think Nick, you and I think both kind of enjoyed that one.
I did, and this one is definitely more tongue in cheek and over the top.
The Crypt Keeper. I don't know. Do they call him the Crypt Keeper?
Or is it? Think so.
No, because that's Tales from the Crypt specifically. But it's the same kind of deal.
Yeah.
A wisecracking pun making. Which I actually thought the puns were in this were so ridiculous in some of the cases that I kind of started liking it.
Yeah,
I went from like, this is so trashy.
There's two stories in here. The first one is written and drawn by Chris Burnham of Batman Incorporated fame.
There's some like, and it's about some like little, a couple of little D-bag kids out trick-or-treating, and one kind of like nerdy kind of kid with them who doesn't want to like take candy from the creepy old guy's house, basically.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, I know, that's right. It's like a just take one is the sign on the thing, and they're like, let's take them all, or let everybody grab a handful of candy. And he's not sure about it. They do it, and they must face the consequences before things are out. And boy, do they!
They do.
For me, the second story was particularly where it's at. This is by Paul Dini. What is the name of the creature?
Shingo.
I don't know how to quite describe it other than imagine a there's kind of a, you know, they often have like people who are pretty bad people in these.
Yeah.
And there's a like bickering, what is it? Is it a divorce?
It's a divorce couple.
Divorced couple. She's putting together it's like a party for the kids.
The husband was supposed to hire the entertainment. Of course, he's a layabout and doesn't do it.
Fell down
and
on it. She
randomly comes across a flyer for this Shingo, the party, whatever.
It's like a party entertaining kind of clown or something like that, or creature.
And he is not exactly the fun kind of party person.
But sort of to the kids at first.
Yeah.
But imagine if one of the, like, the things from, like, the Banana Splits, if you've ever seen the weird old Sid and Marty Krofft show.
Or Where the Wild Things Go.
or Where the Wild Things Are. Or Chuck E. Cheese, Five Nights at Freddy's type of thing.
Exactly.
He is like a big old thing, and they think it's like a dude in like a big weird suit. And it's like, that might not be a suit.
Yeah.
And like dark comedy begins as, you know, he starts eating the kids and stuff. But that one was cracking me up. Shingo is a hilarious, messed up character. And I could tell Paul Dini was having a fun time writing.
Really fun artwork, too, by some...
I liked the second story better than the first
I think the kids are like, where'd you come from, Shingo?
Oh.
And he's like, Shingo come from dark to hellspawn dimension.
Shingo, just kidding.
So
there's a reason I liked that. That story was drawn by John McCrae.
Oh, yeah. Hitman and various other Garth Ennis
collaborations.
Yeah,
but he's definitely got that...
His kind of anarchic style.
But very expressive facial...
Yep. I think if you are looking for those kind of Tales from the Crypt type stories, a little bit turned up to 11 in this case, I think. This is actually a pretty fun time.
We got from IDW Crashing, which is a... basically, it's a story of an ER where supervillains and superheroes are, like, frowned upon, and so most of them are not supposed to be treated, and this sort of renegade doctor treats a superhero and... she's also dealing with sort of her medical pill addiction stuff. It's like her 7-year anniversary of being clean and sober. So
that's,
it's sort of a medical drama with some superhero elements to
it. It's kind
of
cool.
Yeah. And I think there's something else that was on our list that... X-Terminators?
Yeah, I'll do the overview of that. I don't know. Did either of y'all get a chance?
I read it. Yeah.
Okay. X-Terminators is a sort of Girls' Night Out issue of X-Men...
Dazzler gets dumped.
Dazzler gets dumped in the beginning.
Or she dumps... her boyfriend.
Yes, she does.
Who would dump Dazzler?
And to kind of cleanse the palate of having a really shitty day, she calls Jubilee, and Jubilee drags along Tabitha,
aka Boom Boom,
for a girls' night out.
Yeah, like tequila shots and dancing and karaoke and
swearing,
you know, anything
up a storm.
Yeah, so there is lots of swearing in this. They do the thing where they black it out, like with, but they kind of. It's more clear what they're saying in this, And it is the first X-Men book I've ever seen that has features the phrase, you dumb bitches.
Yep.
That's a real thing that happens. It's the girls talking trash to each other. Yep. They're not... Yep. It's not quite as misogynist as that might sound. But it's the vibe is the Bird of Prey movie. Birds of Prey movie.
Yeah.
Which was the rated R Birds of Prey movie with Harley. Lots of that sort of anarchic stuff. And secrets revealed about her ex-boyfriend. I guess I don't want to say what.
No,
the deal
I don't
is.
Want to spoil that.
But it does, like, it triggers some crazy action sequences. It's kind of fun. It's
it's like the Birds of Prey movie, very anarchic.
Yeah, if you kind of wouldn't mind seeing that with a couple of ladies from the X-Men, this is a fun outing.
Yeah, there's a quote on the. Or it's like, this book is gleefully transgressive.
We noticed that, but we seem to think that looks like it's from themselves, like the writer themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if you're allowed to
you're allowed to make that.
But I think it was, I don't know, ironic or something.
Yeah, I think it was done ironically.
Sure.
Do we got anything else? There's another issue of Batman One Bad Day with Two-Face this week, or yep, I don't know if we mentioned that.
Yep, did not. New issues of
y'all like, by the way, Rogues Gallery, right?
I did. I finally caught up on the series, and I did not know it was going to be a four issue mini, but these two issues were really good.
This is like something that is broadly kind of the action of it involves a sort of home invasion, but the why of it all is something that's very rooted in our sort of geek culture, and it's that sort of toxicity where you've got a group of fans of some of this property. It's like a superhero show. TV show.
It basically takes what's happening on the screen a little too seriously.
Like, just like you see on message boards every day.
Yeah.
But basically, there's an actress that they don't like, who they think is bringing the series down and isn't being true to the character. If you ever seen any of the responses in a She-Hulk message thread, then you probably experienced this. And they decide it's what starts out as she had just bought some prop from the show,
the first issue of the comic that the character based on.
But basically they see that in the news and they're like, oh man, that sucks. She doesn't know anything about the comic. She doesn't deserve it. She's just a poser. Let's go steal it from her. And that's how it starts.
And then you see, that was the first issue. And the second issue is told from her perspective. And like, you get to see what the show is actually doing to her real life, to her own body, to dealing with all of this and what it's done to her, sort of her psyche, and that she actually truly is a fan of the character.
Uh-huh.
That's why she's done it for so long and everything.
That's interesting.
So, and then the third one is shit hits the fan.
In a way, I almost like, I'm like, you shouldn't have to be a fan of a character to portray them.
I think that was just sort of incidental. I think she jumped at the chance of playing the character because she liked it so much.
Sure, certainly in any singular story, that's you're going to have some people really are into the characters and stuff that they play or get into them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to read this. I had only read the first one, but y'all were telling me they're doing a pretty good job with these second follow up issues. Mm-hmm. And this was a thing we were kind of fascinated because of course it's the name of our store too. It's Rogues Gallery.
Yeah, it's true.
But we were like, oh, you know, it's probably not actually going to be any good. And then the first issue was like, oh, I was like, that's pretty good. I just don't know what they're going to do with this quite. So it's nice to hear it's turning out.
Yeah. What else we got?
Also, so like, if you like comic industry stuff, Chip Zdarsky's Public Domain, that is about sort of a golden or silver age creator sort of regaining control of his creations with his sons. One of his sons kind of a screw up. It's really interesting stuff, and it's Chip Zdarsky is, I feel like, showing a little bit behind the curtain of what all goes on at Marvel and DC and how they treat their creators after they've made these big, successful movies. And it seems like he's channeling a lot of the frustration that the creators have with Disney and Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
There's another issue of Radiant Black, and there's another issue of Shirtless Bear Fighter, which, good lord, is that book good. It's so weird. It introduces his sensei, who is a bee.
Yep.
There are every page is a panel that cracks me up.
Yeah, it's delightful.
And then Iron Cat, which I really like. I think a lot of people aren't reading or don't know the Black Cat series that Jeb McKay did. Jeb McKay, who's gotten a little bit more famous with Moon Knight. Iron Cat is his like Iron Man Black Cat team up,
which is an odd mix because she's a Spider-Man supporting character usually, and just doesn't generally run in Iron Man circles.
But during the Black Cat series, she stole his foundry and made a suit of armor that she used.
Mm-hmm.
And now one of her old ex-lovers has that suit, and that's where the focus comes in.
It's fun. And, I like when you can do a surprisingly fun team up. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, I've only read odds and ends issues of McKay's Black Cat run, but like I loved Black Cat's dinner with Batroc.
Yep.
And some of the other team ups that happened in that one. So yeah, this is a guy who can pull it off.
There's
yeah.
also a couple more that you didn't get to mention, Randy. Yep. So Edge of the Spider-Verse has another issue.
Oh yeah.
This one introduces characters like Sun Spider, which is a kind of Disney princess Spider-Man, which was wonderful. And then of course the Spider-Mobile, which delightful. There's also
You have to explain what the Spider-Mobile
is. So the Spider-Mobile is basically in a Cars-like world with anthropomorphic cars, and he, like a Transformer, transforms from a car into the Spider-Mobile. Yeah. It's just a delightful
idea.
Is he
bitten by a radioactive spider?
I think that is true, or maybe a VW bug. I don't know. but regardless, there's that. Berserker has an issue 10, and also the second volume trade comes out. So if you want to see what happens to Keanu Reeves and Matt Kent's character, godlike, unkillable character, definitely pick those up. And I think that may have been all that I had to add.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and catch up on She-Hulk and Rings of Power, talk about a board game, and talk about the some movies, including It's Morbid Time. All right, I'm going to start off by talking about a board game that I played recently, which I think I may have talked about before, but Everdell.
Yep.
Which is currently out of print, unfortunately. We're waiting on the restock, but it should be coming back fairly soon.
You wish to taunt the people.
I do wish to taunt the people. It is a fun game in which you are playing cute little animals and building a town.
Do you mean cute little animals like Disney bunnies, or do you mean like they're like little fantasy versions of the characters?
No, they're cute. Well, they're like anthropomorphic. They're all like they're like little. There's a hedgehog, and a mouse, and those are your little meeples. And you're playing a civilization. You're building a little town, and you're buying cards. There's like an eight card thing called the Meadow that anyone can buy from, and then you have a hand of cards up to 8 cards.
Yep.
And you're trying to basically build little shops, and there's a king and a queen that you can buy, and you're sort of like you're using these different resources that are resin, stone, and wood.
Okay.
To sort of build these different cards, you're trying to build a city across 3 seasons.
Okay.
Or 4 seasons. Super fun, very intricate. I suck at this game because there's too many choices to make, and I change my strategy constantly as I'm going through it.
Is it one of those games kind of like Scythe where there's multiple paths to victory?
Yes, and there's different card setups every time, so it's like it's always slightly different.
Yep.
But super fun. I actually also there's a iPad version of it that was like $10 that I got, and I'm playing that. I'm just as bad at that.
So you're not yet master of the Everdell.
I am not. But the iPad version is a good way to practice it. I found I like it better in person. I can see the cards better, and it plays. It's got this cool little 3D tree that is super cool looking. But yeah, if you like sort of resource management at all, Everdell's a really fun game. Really pretty. Very replayable because the cards are going to be different every time. The goals are different every time.
When last you played it, Randy, what beast did you play?
You're not actually playing a beast. You just have meeples.
Oh, okay. I got it.
But the meeple I had was, I believe I had the hedgehogs.
Okay.
Yeah. The meeples are a hedgehog, a mouse, a turtle, and a rabbit, maybe, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, super fun game. I recommend it. And like I say, we kind of got cut out of it. Asmodee screwed up their shipping, even though we had it on pre-order, and a bunch of it went to the mainstream market instead of us. So if you see it at Target, burn that Target to the ground. Rescue all the copies of Everdell.
We don't advocate burning Target to the ground, except in this present.
Right, right. And for legal reasons, I'm joking.
He's not.
But for legal reasons, I am.
For legal reasons, he is. I say give Target just a good shakedown. Scare it a little bit.
I promised it before the break, and we probably should just go ahead and deliver on Morbid Time. Nick, tell us of Morbius, which I know is on Netflix now.
It is, and it's like number one for the movies.
Because the internet is crazy, Nick. They got Sony to release this movie twice. I swear to God, I thought they were going to get them to release it a third time.
I guess I'd missed the fact that it had come to Netflix. I have no recollection of them putting it on there. And I saw
Netflix does. It just happened.
I saw that it was on there as I was scrolling through stuff to
and
watch yesterday.
Play.
And I pressed play because I had to.
And let me just quick ask, Nick, feeling okay? Do you need us to get anything for you?
I'm a little thirsty.
Okay. You're able to get around all right, though? You don't seem to be experiencing convulsions?
He transformed into a swarm of bats and can't get in it this morning. He gets around fine.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm enjoying a new lease on life.
I thought the trailers didn't look bad for this.
All right.
How was it?
Overall, not great.
All right.
On a scale of Venom to Venom 2...
It might have been better than Venom 2, actually.
Venom 2 was watchable.
It was watchable, but it wasn't great.
It wasn't great. It did destroy the possibility of a vast Venom legacy series.
It's true. and they had such promise. Woody Harrelson as Carnage, that made so much sense.
I think they should not have let the director be a mocap man.
Yeah. you could have done much more. However, Morbius is basically Jared Leto being Jared Leto as Dr. Michael Morbius, who's sick with a sickness from childhood that is slowly killing him. And to find a cure, he goes to the vampire bat.
Sure,
like you do.
In the comics. That's all. Yeah. That happened in the comics.
Honestly,
he was their way of getting around doing undead vampires. Mm-hmm. He was a living vampire. It was like a weird medical sort of thing, or like a biological thing.
And they have Jared Harris play. Yeah, no, that all plays out exactly. Jared Harris
is supernatural,
like
supernatural stuff in it.
I mean, other than the vampire stuff.
I mean, but
that's
like
science vampires.
That's
aren't science,
science vampire.
Vampires.
More or less science vampires.
Does, like he can't be killed with like with a cross or a stake or anything like that.
I mean,
right?
They didn't. No one tried. Yeah. They did have Tyrese Gibson as a cop, who was like playing the most understated Tyrese Gibson I've ever seen.
Interesting.
I
don't know how I feel about that.
No, it was kind of a boring Tyrese
unleash.
Gibson. Yeah, you have
the
to
Tyrese.
Unleash
Nick. Let me ask you this. Was it worse than every Fast and Furious movie Tyrese Gibbs has ever been in, including Too Fast, Too Furious?
Yes.
Okay.
The villain of the piece is played by Matt Smith.
Sure.
Who plays his childhood friend. yes, Daemon Targaryen, or the Doctor. However, you could tell he's having just a blast playing a random villain because
really?
That's all he's doing. He's
does
like,
he have powers? Is he become
yeah, he,
a vampire
he has
too?
The same debilitating disease that Michael Morbius does.
Well, that's just unfortunate.
And Michael doesn't want to give it to him because it's turned him into a blood-sucking vampire. Of course, this does not stop Matt Smith from taking it.
He
and
sees
turning
that
into
as a feature, not a bug.
Right. And he goes on killing
a
sprees and
feature,
blah, 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 things. I will say the effects, the turning into vampire, like, to the bats and
That's the one part I don't get. Like, most of the other things I saw were, like, sort of science-y things, you know, like, sort of flying
well, really
and
turn
stuff.
Into bats. He, like, turned into, like, a mist kind of thing and, like, travels
but how
along.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. Did he do that in the comics?
I don't think so.
He flew on, like, air currents.
He flies,
kinda,
he's strong, he drinks
somehow
blood.
That seems to make more sense to me as, like, if you're saying this is some weird genetic mutation that
he
allows
can,
him to do that.
I think
but
in the
like
comics,
turning into bats just doesn't seem like something science can get
I
you
I think
to.
In the comics he can hypnotize people, which again, you can do that.
I'll accept it. Nick, you were saying the special effects though are pretty good.
They're solid. Okay. They're well above average.
Okay.
Nick, is this so bad it's good territory or it's just kind of bad?
See that whether
it
it's bad
or
good,
just
it's just kind of meh.
There's
nothing exciting about it. The story is just kind of by the numbers.
Yeah.
You kind of it felt like a 90s era Marvel property.
Okay.
And we've just kind of gone past that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's
anything surprisingly good about it? Cool soundtrack, something like that?
No.
Okay. Anything surprisingly bad about it?
No.
All right.
How does it rank with the other Blade movies? Is it worse than Blade 3?
No, I like Blade 3.
Okay, all right.
Better or worse than Venom 2?
It's better than Venom 2.
Better than Venom 2. Okay. I found Venom 2 watchable.
But I've watched it.
Anything else recently?
But Dave, I've
like
watched Venom
passable.
2. I own it. I will never watch it again, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I've watched Venom number 1 multiple times.
Yes, I know. You forced me to watch this. It's delightful.
Yeah, Nick, we should always just remember the possibilities that Carnage held, that
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I will hold on to that stinger. With
Woody
Death
Harrelson. that was like just all that it could have been.
And all that it could have been, and then Venom 2 flushed it down the toilet.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Gollum.
Well, I saw that Sony had delayed Kraven and the other movie that they were doing.
Well, I will say the bonkers thing that happened, the stingers in Morbius 2 and Morbius are the dumbest stingers I've ever seen.
Isn't it Vulture? Isn't Vulture in it?
Yes, he gets brought over during the time where the universe thing in No Way Home, he gets transported into Morbius's universe.
Wow.
And I'm just like Michael Keaton delivering lines. I'm just like, Michael, why are you in this? Why are you doing this?
No. Was Sony basically trying to draft some of the stuff people out of the MCU?
Well, he makes a comment that's like, well, I think we should get a group together and, you know.
That's their Sinister
cool.
Six.
Yeah, and that'd be like the Sinister Six movie that's never going to happen.
Nope. Wow. All right, so I feel safe not watching
it. Oh, don't watch it. Yeah. You're not missing anything. You're not going to gain anything.
No.
All right, we're going to catch up on She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Which I think we've only talked about the first episode here.
I think we've been in passing mentioned a couple of times, but...
We haven't done a little catch-up.
No.
She-Hulk is presently... She's straight up practicing law for...
GL&K.
GL&K. Handling superhuman-type cases.
Yep.
Trying to get her dating career going or dating life back up and running again without much success.
She-Hulk
turns out
is
guys
hired.
Aren't super dating great.
She-Hulk is specifically hired. Jennifer Walters is not hired.
Yeah, and She-Hulk is having a pretty good time dating too.
Yes.
Jennifer Walters not so much.
No.
She-Hulk had one good time dating and a lot of bad dates.
And even that one time when she transformed back, That guy kind of was, like, pieced out, which was really shitty.
Yeah, that's too bad, because he otherwise seemed like a halfway decent dude.
I actually
feel like there's something more to his story. I think we're going to get something more about why he thinks the way he thinks, and that they might reconnect again.
I mean, it's possible.
But maybe not. He definitely is a guy who was like,
they'll introduce Jack of Hearts. You never know.
Yes.
Maybe he is Jack of Hearts.
Anyway, just to quick talk about the latest episode, there's a funny bit. So... influencer Titania is played by
Jamil.
Yep.
It is weird to see her with an American accent.
Yes.
I don't like it.
Oh,
but they should have just made her British.
She had shown in the first episode and is basically how She-Hulk became famous.
Mm-hmm.
She busted into a courtroom with her powers. She was trying to kill...
No, she was running away from a drunk and disorderly trial.
Okay.
Yeah.
She did throw.
She
like,
knocked her out with super strength,
mm-hmm.
and she'd been pissed ever since.
Mm-hmm.
She did look like she was going to kill an entire jury.
Oh, she did.
People.
Yeah, she did throw a thing at a jury.
Yeah.
But she was mad. She didn't have a bad day.
Right. It wasn't. She wasn't trying to assassinate them or anything. She was just
careless.
A doofus influencer with powers.
Yes.
So cut to the present, and what I thought was a very good premise. She-Hulk finds out that she has. Since she never secured a copyright on her name,
mm-hmm.
That Titania has and has given her like a cease and desist on her own name,
And is also selling like the worst like beauty products, like booty boosting shakes, like snake oil type.
There's some hysterical advertising that you get to see.
This episode also gives us our first real glimpse at Mallory Book.
Mm-hmm. Renee Elise Goldberg.
Let's say to the audience who Mallory Book is.
Basically the hotshot attorney that GL&K...
she was running the Superhuman Law before She-Hulk.
Yes.
And
she resents her a little bit.
Right.
But they skimmed over that pretty quickly. They get to a point of being friends pretty quickly, and I liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're sort of gal pals.
Yeah.
You know?
They've made She-Hulk very likable.
Yes.
I think that's
one of her main characteristics in
the
comics.
I think so, too. Yeah, she's very likable.
And ultimately, I guess it's what's her name? The character's
Mallory?
Name?
Mallory Book?
Mallory Book, yeah. Is she the one who comes up with the notion?
No, Jen comes up
with it. Jen comes up with it by accident.
Can we say, I think we can say
I think at this point.
It's a hilarious, almost like a reflection or an inversion of what had happened the previous episode, where the D-bag lawyer they previously
Dennis.
Worked with,
yep.
They were able to get him off in court by using Jennifer herself as a witness to his trashy, absolute, idiotic character.
Talking about how delusional he was and how entitled he was.
And they're like, that allowed him to get out of the mess he was in.
Yeah.
In this, She-Hulk has to do it to herself.
Yep.
She has to reveal that she did have a claim on her name because she used it in her dating profile when she was trying to find people. And that means calling up all of her ex-dates to testify that she did, in fact, refer to herself as She-Hulk.
You know what, Dan? You think the doctor dude is going to come back, the guy who she actually like hooked up with. I think it's the other dude.
The guy who's friends
like
the fanboy,
who's friends with Mallory. Like, that's the guy we're going to see more of.
Probably
I think we're
going to
find out that he's more decent than we thought he was. That he's basically just a bit of a fanboy, but basically a decent guy. I think that's the story we're going to see.
I think Granny's right.
Because also that actor looks familiar. I think
he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I will also say this episode gave us, Pug and... What is her name?
Izzy. Not Izzy. Her friend. I can't remember her name. Nikki. Nikki, who's great.
Going on a, trying to find Jen better clothes, and also trying to find and secure his Iron Man shoes.
Yes.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah. They, along their path to getting, some better clothes for her that will work for She-Hulk and, like, have some superhero protectiveness type stuff in them, they have to buy, just to get past through the door, some bootleg Avengers merchandise.
Yes, Avengers.
Avengers, yeah, that's super good, and I saw that they have, like, made their own fake bootleg merchandise. Yeah,
that's kind of genius, isn't it? They're like we have licensed bootleg merchandise.
Yeah, when I saw it, I actually wondered if they might be that clever, and they were.
They were. It's pretty great.
Anyway, So the show is very funny. It's like a breezy half hour. Yep. Sometimes it seems like it's over before you know it.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever heard any pushback that I kind of buy into.
No, it's all dumb. It's all dumb guys online who are like, "Why can't She-Hulk be less powerful than Man-Hulk?"
Right. Or just like, think that Deadpool was the first person to break the fourth wall. Mm-hmm.
The thing that annoys me so much is that people are watching this just for Daredevil, and I'm like. They're, like, making me watch this stupid female-led show to get to Daredevil.
Here's the thing. I don't think this is going to happen. But as I point out to Dave, Daredevil doesn't seem like a guy who goes to a super tailor. But D-Man absolutely is that kind of guy.
You think it's going
to
be D-Man?
No, I don't. But it makes more sense to me if it was D-Man.
Right. And for those who don't know, D-Man is a super D-list superhero whose costume is made up of, like... Daredevil and Wolverine costumes, like, taken from a store.
I mean, the Netflix show, he had... What's his name make his costume?
Melvin Potts?
Yeah, Potts.
He did have Gladiator make his costume.
So, I mean, it's not, like, a stretch.
It's not the craziest thing, but I would...
Melvin Potts not around anymore?
He must not be. But also,
I mean, like, did he get killed off in the series?
I don't think so.
I'm not sure.
But also, they have sort of hinted at that Daredevil Born Again is not going to be the continuity of Daredevil.
It's not.
Netflix.
I don't think it is.
So I think that all that stuff is out the window.
That's weird. I don't quite know why they would do that.
I think I do, because
they
want to
do their own
thing. They want to do their
own thing. I get that.
I'm actually okay with them not doing a super dark Daredevil show. I want kind of like the Mark Waid High Adventure.
Yeah, it's just weird for me to imagine them, like, I've yet to see Marvel do a reboot of that level.
Yeah,
I think it makes sense, especially because they got the multiverse, so they have sort of done that. Like, Spider-Man, they've kind of done that. They've like, oh no, that all exists, but it's somewhere else.
But I want to see Charlie Cox and Tatiana Maslany work a case together.
I think that'd be great.
But Nick, like you, I occasionally see those comments with the Daredevil stuff, and I find them kind of galling. I'm like, if you are only watching this fun, superhero comedy, which is what it is, what the character very often is in the comics, it all fits perfectly. If you're only watching that for the punchy punch and the closing credits, post credit sequences,
which we didn't get,
that's just kind of sad.
It is. It's very sad.
Like. Let yourself enjoy things that aren't just Daredevil punching, for God's sake.
this is proof to me that Disney Plus has found their rhythm for television shows.
Yeah.
I mean, I've loved all the... Ms. Marvel I loved, and I have really enjoyed a lot of the other ones. But this one, I'm just like, if they can make a sitcom, like a 30-minute sitcom comedy out of She-Hulk, and it works this well, I'm like, yeah. Just do whatever you want now. I don't care. I'll watch.
I do not need that much Marvel in my life, but I have to say that they're pretty damn good at what they do.
And also, in the closing credits, which we have now learned that artist Kagan McLeod...
Yeah, I was going to say.
...does all the credit sequences.
Yeah, so
that's the guy who did the comic Infinite Kung Fu, which was kind of...
been on a print for like a decade, but it was great.
But it was a little bit of a minor hit, at least in our store.
He got to draw Deadpool shoes, if you saw it. So, amongst pugs.
Nick, why are you going
to
do that?
Why do you need to remind us that Deadpool is about to come in and ruin the Marvel Universe? Yes.
No, I think they can be really smart and have Jen and Deadpool. That would be a fun counter part. Yes, it'd be great.
Anyway, also, we didn't talk about Madison.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, that, so previous episode, a unexpected breakout character, Madison, the drunk party girl.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have
been specifically. The Y, two N's and a Y, but not where you really think.
Her connection to Wong.
Wongers? So, you mean Wongers?
Wongers.
How is she? I can't remember. How is she?
She is a bystander, gets trapped into Donnie Blaze's magic show.
Okay,
sent
right.
To a dimension. Makes a deal with the goat.
The goat.
So, yeah, just a quick rewind. Donnie Blaze is like a skeevy magic user who Wong is suing because he's like. He was one of the like apprentices at the Mystic Arts kind of academy or wherever.
He trained at Kamertage.
Yep. And
for a week.
And then like basically he became like a magic school dropout, and now he does trashy magic like Vegas type shows, like crappy Vegas shows, not the good ones.
Yeah.
And but he occasionally throws in a little real magic to spice it up, and it's getting dangerous. So Wong wants to shut him down, goes to Jennifer, and he's already had a good appearance in there. He's been a fun recurring character. And along the way, Madison, drunk girl from one of who went through a portal in one of the magician shows, is called on to testify and ends up forming a bond with Wong.
Well, I love the fact that she's introduced in while
she's like,
Wong
in
is trying.
She
to,
always has like a Cosmo in her hand.
Well, Wong is trying to kind of decompress and finally get to watch The Sopranos, and she appears out of a portal and instantly spoils Sopranos.
Yes, that's fantastic.
She was amazing.
What's funny is we talked about this. That character type, generally, if you see that in a movie, that is immediate code for you. This is a bad person.
Yep.
And somehow she became the kind of fun version of that because she did like kind of she's kind of outgoing and friendly. She's watching TV with Wong.
She's
I don't know if there's
lines.
More going on. Do you think there's more going on?
No, she's not Mephisto.
No.
Oh, no. She's like, is that going to be her? Is
are they having sex is what I'm asking.
No, I don't think
so. Is it a dating thing?
I bet they could become boyfriend, girlfriend.
I think they're just buddies.
Friends of benefits?
I think they're buddies.
I believe that is probably the case, too. But I was trying to decide if there was any more implied. I don't think this really particularly
is. I believe Wong is sort of an ascetic monk type dude. I don't think
maybe
he,
so.
I don't think he is.
I loved her.
But Bro watches The Sopranos.
Sopranos,
he's
sure,
not
yeah,
too.
He's, no.
Too
I
is
loved
not
her,
all chanting.
No.
I loved her. Did you get pulled over? You could always say you were calling 911 and they can't ticket you for that. And Jen's like, no,
that's not true.
Yeah. She's a likable ditz.
Yeah,
And a great character.
She reminds me
of show.
Harmony on
Harmony on Buffy.
On Buffy.
Yeah.
She is that character.
Yeah. I look forward to the show every week. I'm bummed that it's on Thursdays. I wanted to be on Wednesday so I can see it one day earlier.
Yeah.
By the way, for people who are actually able to enjoy life, these have been producing tons of fun memes, fun Madison memes. Lots of other stuff, you know, from the show.
If you look at that Keegan MacLeod, there's all kinds of little Easter eggs.
Oh,
shoes.
Yeah.
He's got shoes from, like, Cyclops and Wolverine and all
Green
that
Green
Goblin.
Stuff.
Yeah. Which is probably just bits that Keegan MacLeod drew in. But everyone is like, oh my god, they're all in continuity. I'm like, guys, it's just a gag. It's just a gag.
But I think they are, like if they're sort of tipping the hat as to what's to come.
They are, yeah.
I don't think it's, like, super meaningful.
Well, yeah.
The Wolverine Easter egg is
there's
pretty...
the Easter egg for Wolverine, yes. But again, I think all those could just be gags. I think they're going to do their own introduction
stuff.
We'll see. Anyway, She-Hulk is super fun. I think it's probably my favorite of the Marvel shows. Even above Hawkeye, which I loved Hawkeye. But I think this is
that's the thing. I think they're progressively getting better and better. And because I say that with each one, I'm like, oh, I liked this one a lot better than the last one. Because I love Hawkeye, but Ms. Marvel kind of tipped that a little bit
for me. I
did
like
Ms.
Marvel. And I think I liked Hawkeye better than Ms. Marvel, though. As much as I loved Ms. Marvel. And I liked it better than Moon Knight. Although, I liked all those.
Yeah.
I've liked all of them. But this is the one that feels like they found that this is what makes the Marvel TV stuff work for me. Like, this feels like its own thing, as opposed to everything else feeling like an extension of the MCU.
Right.
Yeah, I really love this show.
I will say, is this the first, like, comedy that they've done? I know WandaVision showed that,
but
it wasn't
dark.
Like a comedy per se, and certainly the last half wasn't.
This is the first comedy.
This is like an actual comedy.
I will remind you the last half had...
Haters are like, no, it's not.
I'll remind you that the last half had Ralph Boner, so...
What?
The last half of WandaVision have Ralph Boner. So
I mean, it had comedy. It had comedy elements, but it, at the end, it had a big giant
There was some
battle.
Super big drama.
Yes,
yeah.
There was.
This one, I feel like, is just going to have a half-hour comedy, and I don't know if the stakes are very low.
But they're definitely addressing these sort of, like, the male, the misogyny and stuff.
Oh, God,
like,
yes.
Head on. They knew what they were going to get.
Yeah, I love that.
And
a lot of great breaking the fourth wall. We did talk about this, I know, before, but, like, acknowledging that the guests give them a reprieve from some criticism.
She's especially like, yeah, Wong
makes us Twitter-proof for a week.
Yeah.
Which she just it does not.
No.
No, but it's a fun notion.
Also, I don't think I can express how much I love Tatiana Maslany as
this
character.
She's so good. Yeah.
She's
this entire cast, Pug, Nikki, even the guy who's like her boss. I love the fact the little drawing of him and having the booty-boosting smoothie. It's a great cast.
Why are we having this issue? I hired you specifically for this.
Yes.
It was like, sir, I will...
He's like, I don't need to know the details.
I don't need to know the details.
Yeah, everybody in this is great. Let's talk Rings of Power, which again, I think we talk the first episode?
We talked the first episode.
Yeah, we may have like briefly touched in on it before. This is another one that's like, not hard to find a pushback on it.
Nope.
But like... I find most of the people I've talked to have been having a really good time with it.
I'm enjoying it. I'm not the biggest Lord of the Rings fan, but I think this is really good.
I think this is...
If you knew anything about the books, Randy, you'd hate it.
That's probably true, but I hate books.
I'm going to be kind of crazy and say this is my favorite hour of television of the week.
Really?
Well, it's very fascinating right now because like they've done something I didn't think you could do with Lord of the Rings. I talked about this a little bit before, I think, which is to like have compelling mysteries.
I was going to say, they've made it a puzzle box.
Yeah,
right. This is a prequel.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain things we know has to happen. We know Sauron's going to rise up. We're pretty sure that Mordor is the being founded, essentially.
Yeah.
Gondor's potentially, it's waiting in the wings to be founded. So all these key elements, but we don't really know quite how it's going to happen, and they've made these mysteries and twists and turns in it very compelling.
Like, who is Adar?
It also, by the way, has the same quality of Game of Thrones early on, which is to say, they'll like move around a lot. Like, oh, we're in the far flung island nation of Numenor. Oh, now we're with the Harfoot hobbits in Middle Earth. Oh, now you know we're like in the Dwarven mines. And so, and each one of those plots has been pretty interesting.
I think I enjoy Rings of Power and sort of the Lord of the Rings on a grander scale because I know that evil will be defeated.
Yeah,
and I know there's a lot of like bad shit that happens and horrible people and things. People die and all this other stuff.
But this is broadly a heroic cycle?
A heroic cycle where Game of Thrones is
Game of Thrones is an incest murder cycle.
And I think all of...
By the way, don't ever get on the incest murder cycle at the gym. It's bad. It'll burn calories, but...
And also, one of the things I like most about the show is the fact that every like story we're seeing, it's been thought through. Like, there is such a level of detail, and none of them are boring. There's no story in here that I'm like, oh, can we get away from this and go back to...
I'm a little bored with the Harfoots, to be honest.
I think the Harfoots are so interesting.
I like the Harfoots. Those are the... For anybody who doesn't know, they're the ancestors of hobbits who, while kind of isolationist in the same way that hobbits are not like the homebodies. They are nomads.
Yeah, they're nomads.
I think I like halflings or hobbits just a little bit less than elves, or maybe a little bit more. Huh? I'm glad there's not a ton of elves in this. There's just one badass one.
He has had some of the best... He basically
what
puts Legolas
say?
To shame.
It's like Arendelle.
Sorry, you're right. There's multiple elves.
I don't know that I'd say he puts him to shame. Well, yeah, because what's his name? Elrond is
Elrond
a...
There's multiple
really
the elf I was thinking of, though, is
Arendelle.
Not Arendelle. Galadriel.
Galadriel's
awesome.
Amazing.
So Arendelle, what I thought was interesting about this actor, who I think he's a sort of a mixture of like black and like Puerto Rican descent.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I saw a great photo of him celebrating it on his own page. And he is like, he is loud and proud in the faces of the haters. Mm-hmm. And
good, he should be.
He should be. And he's doing a fantastic job of playing an elf that's kind of very unlike other elves I've seen. He's kind of taciturn and stoic. I feel like he does a lot of internal acting where you see on his face his longing both for a woman who we know that just in general, elves and humans, the gap in lifespans and then their sort of cultures is so... almost like make them alien to each other in the Lord of the Rings
setting.
But that
pairing does happen.
But it has happened. It's just that it like kind of usually has that mythic tragedy thing about it. But I like them together, and I feel like I see a lot on his face. Man, and there was an episode where he was captured, and they make a he makes an almost escape that was insanely intense. And then the orcs that capture him, like, make him, like, hew down this tree.
Yep.
And it was messed up. Like, well, it felt like they were asking him to kill a baby.
Yeah, they definitely played that up.
Well, like, in this one, he catches an arrow out of the air.
That was awesome.
I was like, holy shit.
And fires it back at them.
Yep.
And it's like, he does have the thing that Legolas did, which is, like, he doesn't make a shot that misses.
No. But I'm okay, because that they've shown that elves are just utter badasses.
Yep. Well, they also... So Elrond is the... politician elf.
Yep.
But he is fairly... He's presented in sort of, I think, the same way that... Something that came through with Hugo Weaving's version in the movies, too, even if he felt a little more aloof in that, as much older.
Yeah.
Thousands of years older.
This one feels like he's got a little bit more of, like, the youthfulness and a little more heart.
He does. He's pretty warm towards... what's the dwarf?
Durin.
Yeah.
And yet there is, like... The dwarves have a certain amount of, like... distrust that's kind of not I don't think they're completely wrong about some of their distrust of the elves. Like, is in other words, there are agendas going on.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, their friendship in it is great. I love Durin's wife.
Durin's wife is great. She gets a phenomenal moment where she sings.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
And they actually give... There's a... You know, the show early on, I think the writing got knocked a little bit. And as I had to get used to the cadence, which was more on that epic scale.
Yeah.
But now that I've seen it, I'm like, there are some moments where I was like, oh, that was a great exchange, or that was a really memorable line of dialogue, and it had that epic Tolkien feel to it.
Well, what's kind of cool is that the scene that I thought was most compelling for me, there were a lot, but... When Elrond is talking about his father and sort of being turned into, like, doing so much, and then he was raised by the gods to be kind of a star that never dimmed.
The ultimate family to live
in. But I'm forgetting his name, but that same name was the light that Galadriel gives Frodo, the bottle of.
Yeah, the
it was
tears
like,
of whatever.
Yeah, that's a part of him, and that just kind of is a cool little, like, nod.
There were flashbacks in the Peter Jackson movies to the sort of mythic eras, you know, those battles with Sauron.
Yeah.
This is taking place before that, and now you're actually seeing these kind of links.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In a way that is, like, that creates a real sense of scope to it all.
Yeah, but you know what I think is, the thing is, like, even though this is big and it's got that scope, it feels smaller and more personal than the movies did.
Right.
Because we're so character-focused.
Yeah. Right. At the moment, there's not, like... It's not about big battles.
It's not about armies.
No.
Although Galadriel is building an army.
Right. But it is, like, you know, the Harfoots, it's, you know, it's about the mystery of this human that they've rescued who fell from the sky. And then, but also them traveling around and, like... Who gets left behind if, you know, someone's injured and things
like
that.
They all stay on the trail and no one gets left behind. The song says so.
They seem to be willing to just throw somebody into the
lake. We also get a further look at Numenor and maybe its downfall.
Man, Numenor looks great.
Yeah,
it really does. That's the other thing. This looks expensive as hell.
The effects are beyond good. Like, Numenor feels like a real place. There's never any moment when I'm looking at it and I'm like, kind of fakey. I'm like, oh, that looks like a vast island nation with a, you know, big... inland bay kind of thing that looks completely real.
Well, I hate that.
And they're a shipbuilder society, too.
Right.
They kind of remind me of, like, ancient Greeks.
To do the comparison with the Hot D, but, I mean, you can't help but do it since they're running concurrently.
House of the Dragon, yes.
But the way that looks, where it occasionally will have this epic feeling, like, scene.
Yeah.
Where, like, the one on the bridge, where you get the both dragons, and they're kind of doing their standoff. This one, I feel like every episode has, like, four or five moments where it just feel, like, epically drawn and, like, beautifully staged.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the tree, like, leaving, or having its leaves falling and what that means.
Yeah.
I was just like, this was so well shot.
Yeah. Their vision of the fall of Numenor was, like, I almost felt, like, a little claustrophobic because I saw this tidal wave coming at me and I was like, oh no. but also, the scene, reminiscent of sort of the Helm's Deep battle... even though it's a much smaller scale, when the elf guy does save the young kid, when Arendelle saves him, and they're like, he manages to get out of the forest and the overcast sky, which the orcs can move under.
Yep.
When the sun breaks out,
and you get
it's
Howard
kind
Shore's
of like,
crescendo, or Bear McCreary,
channeling Howard Shore very much. And like these, it's like the orcs are still like firing arrows and stuff at them. They still got out there, but it was like an amazing heroic kind of moment.
What did you think of Adar?
Fascinating. I thought
need
he was
more of him. I need more. The idea of
a dark elf is really interesting.
I was trying to figure out when, and you know, there's another character we don't know who they are. The running gag in like sort of meme culture is that every time any new character appears, the fans are like, is that Sauron?
That's Sauron.
That's probably Sauron in disguise. I bet that's Sauron. He's yet another candidate for it. Probably not, but
you know what, guys? I just realized Nori. If you reverse it, it's Sauron.
Sorry.
Yep.
Like a Canadian would say. The orcs were made from twisted from elves. And I was like, is this guy a sellout elf? Is he somehow someone who consulted on the supernatural way to do that?
Well, he talked about sort of like being in the elves' world. Like, I was there, you know, hundreds of years ago or something.
Gandalf, 3,000 years ago.
I mean, it felt like that when he was talking to you. But also sort of he was actually like crying when he had to kill the other orc in kind of this weird religious...
I don't think we're quite going to see overly humanized orcs. They are very terrifying.
They are.
They're as creepy
But I think
hell.
It makes it even creepier that this person has sort of like a little bit of humanity.
Yeah. He and clearly the orcs revere him.
Yeah. I don't think he's Sauron. I
don't think so either.
I think he... either works for him or is trying to sort of like achieve a godhood, like he says.
For all we know, this could be somebody who ends up being a rival for his power,
right?
And that, you know, like
that's why
again,
he forms the rings.
There's, you know, Tolkien like might you might imagine like 20 pushpins of like key events, but like vast spaces in between them, where you can like really imagine almost anything happening. And I wasn't sure I was going to be able to accept that, but because it feels Lord of the Ringsy to me, I have been able to. And yeah, that means it's like, oh, Sauron might not be the only bad guy. There could be somebody who has a rival for power. This Adar could have been like somebody who nearly challenged him and just didn't quite make the history books.
Yeah. We also got a Palantir in this episode, which is always a big no-no.
Yep.
The Seeing Stone that kind of gives the visions. But that's what Saruman, corrupted in
a
lot of ways.
I forgot about that.
We also, I think, catch a glimpse of Narsil, the fabled blade that will take off Sauron's hand in the chamber where the Palantir is. It's on the wall. It looked very similar to the Narsil blade.
See, I don't know any of these details. It's like watching this movie for me is what it must be like for other people watching the Marvel movies. Like, all the Easter eggs are completely over my head.
I will say this. I am not the biggest Lord of the Rings fan. I mean, I love it, but I don't know.
Tall.
I don't know the knowledge as well, but I'm enjoying diving into it because it's such an interesting world.
Well,
and
I think that's exactly
interesting.
What happened with people who got pulled into the Marvel movies. There's lots of people who got into the MCU who didn't read the comics. And I'm proud to say that we've never gatekept any of that stuff, because why would you?
Right.
Why not have people...
I do. Fake fans, what I call them.
Why not have the people having fun? And
if you don't know Rocket Raccoon came from Half-World, then why are you even watching the movies?
All right, Randy, I was trying to make a point.
Sorry.
No, I know what I was going to say.
But I will also say, like, I don't care about the condensifying of, like, thousands of years into 100 years
playing
or
with
50...
the timeline, and I think it's sort of working in the same way that like we know that the MCU movies they do find their own path. They don't they don't slavishly follow the comics. They pick and choose what they want to do, but they're like there's a truthfulness enough to it that now with Tolkien, I at least to some degree understand how people could be like, that's just a bridge too far. You know, this is not Marvel continuity written by hundreds and hundreds of writers over the years. This was one guy, and you're changing his stuff. And so I could understand at least the basis of some criticism towards it. And I don't even mind if somebody's just like, oh yeah, I just don't like the writing or whatever.
I need to check into that podcast. I hope he's doing something on this.
Who's
The Tolkien professor?
Yeah. That guy seems to have be the most prolific person I know, because he's, in addition to like always having like one or two podcasts going on about like different Tolkien stuff, including like pop stuff, like the show. He's usually, you know, he has other lectures on other books he does. I mean, like,
but I would love to hear, because he's so positive about just like things in general.
Well, even the movies, which had a few things that were kind of galling to people and characterizations that were tweaked from the books. To him, it's all kind of like a teaching moment, and not even like, tut tut, that's not how Gimli's supposed to be. It's like, oh, it's interesting to talk about why they changed it, or, you know, what must have went into that, or what people might be interested to know about the Gimli of the books, or, you know, whatever, that wasn't represented on the movie. So, yeah, he is that kind of very positive guy.
I'm just saying, I really look forward to Fridays until I can watch it till, like, Sunday, because, like, Kaylee's not into this as much. She doesn't like the high fantasy. She likes Game of Thrones.
I don't like the high fantasy either, but, yeah. We can also talk about Game of Thrones, but I think we're all behind.
I'm an episode behind, yeah.
I'm two episodes behind and quite possibly permanently behind.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm not feeling it.
I know there's a big time jump after this last episode, so...
Are they going to jump in the far future and have cyberpunk elves?
I mean, that would be cool.
They don't have elves.
They don't have elves Game of Thrones.
You're right. But in the future, they will.
Cyberpunk White Walkers?
Cyberpunk White Walkers.
I like it.
I'm going to try and stick out a few more episodes. It's not like this show is like doing anything terribly wrong. It's just kind of like, it's a little morose sometimes to just be like, oh yeah, times did suck.
I also feel, honestly, HBO was trying to one-up Amazon here. Like, they put out House of the Dragon as the counter-programming for Rings of Power, and I think that was a bad call.
I mean, yes, but like, this a follow-up to Game of Thrones was probably in thoughts like a decade ago.
Yeah, like, no, but I think their timing's bad. Like, if Rings of Power wasn't up against it right now, I might be more interested in having a fantasy show. But I have a good fantasy show. I don't need House of the Dragon right now.
Right.
But Lord of the Rings don't get those titties.
No, there are plenty of places to see titties on TV.
But Game of Thrones doesn't have awesome stories being told. It has the story of the Targaryen legacy.
Endlessly and it's skeevy people being skeevy.
Yeah. And I like...
And actually, there's had some halfway decent people in the mix.
Yeah, but it's...
I don't hate it. I just don't care.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to watch to the time jump or an episode or two into that and, you know, see if it's getting me or if I'll wait for a few years and...
Because it's 10 episodes, right? That's HBO's normal thing.
That'll be right.
Rings of Power is only 8.
Oh, is it? Okay. I mean, that makes sense. They're longer episodes.
So how many do we have left?
3? We only have 5, 6, we have 4.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're at the halfway.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's very likely...
But they're puffy episodes.
Yeah, it's very likely we'll get a season 2, I think. I don't know what the ratings look like or anything, but...
Well, I think they already
said...
They said, like, 25 million people tuned into the first episode.
It had the most watched thing that Amazon has ever had.
Good. All right.
And it's honestly the best thing.
I think they already gave the go-ahead to season 2.
Yeah.
It's the best thing Amazon's ever done.
The Boys and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
It's well, I can't talk about Mrs. Maisel because I never watched it. It's better than The Boys.
The thing is, I don't know if I'd say it's better than The Boys, but man, it's close.
It is hard to compare, you know, like epic storytelling is its own sort of pleasure. It's
I love The Boys and I love it for its raunchy insanity, but this first storytelling,
I don't know that I would say it was better, but the thing is, I can't argue that it's not. Like, it's really great.
For me, though, I think I take more enjoyment from this.
You know what's going to be kind of cool is, I'm sure it's already begun happening, but there's going to be some amazing cosplay out of this. Mm-hmm.
I heard that the costume designer designed the Galadriel armor and everything as a challenge to cosplayers. She was like, I would love for you to do this. And
that's
just
mean.
She wants to see the person that these people do cosplay.
I mean...
And I've already seen it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what else is cool, though, is like... Galadriel's, like, sort of simple, like, that sort of white, sort of torn, tattered dress she had for her shipwreck dress.
Yes.
With bare feet, which you probably don't want to walk around all day at a convention like that. But it's a good look. It's a cool look,
so
too.
All the elves go... Or going back to wherever. Valinor? No.
It's because, it's like just, it was some kind of ceremonial.
Ceremonial robe,
But yeah, like, she is, that actress is able to sort of do what, who's the actress who played her in the Peter Jackson movies? Cate Blanchett. Kind of do what she does, which is to say, like, she kind of has a potency in, no matter what she's wearing.
Yeah, do the armor, that giant flowy blue dress that she, or blue teal dress that she was wearing when she was riding the horse, and, like, that slow motion horse shot, which was awesome.
Yep. But I did like that they occasionally will, like, have a little bit of fun and, like, show that, like, oh, she can overstep her bounds and get put in jail, too.
that was delightful.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do we have any other?
What are you in for? Sedition. Yeah.
Do we have any other topics?
Yeah, I was real quick going to revisit a couple horror movies that I watched. Yep. Dave, I don't know if you want to step out so you don't get spoiled.
Yeah, you want to pause it real quick?
Yeah,
I'll take flight.
All right. We're going to pause. When we come back, Dave will not be here no more. All right, through the magic of podcast editing, Dave has vanished.
It's true.
To people listening, he just happened.
You know, spooky podcast?
Yeah, spooky podcast.
People disappear.
He was dragged away like the people at the end of Wreck.
That's true.
Yes.
Oh, God, that's a very good movie. I haven't watched
it. Yeah, Wreck's great. Wreck's great. Wreck 2 is great. I hear don't watch anything else.
Yeah.
So the movie I watched, Nick, you recommended this, and it was on my list of 20 movies to watch. I watched two so far of my 20. The first one's The Night House.
Yes.
This is directed by... I looked it up. I said his name earlier and I forgot it already.
Bruckner?
Bruckner? No, not Bruckner. No.
Let's see.
We should have looked this up. We're terrible at this.
We are. We're not good.
We're terrible podcasters. This is directed by...
David Bruckner.
It is Bruckner.
We were right.
We were right. David Bruckner. The quick pitch on this is a widow begins to uncover her recently deceased husband's disturbing secrets. So this is Rebecca Hall doing a kind of a one-man show in a lot of ways.
It is.
Basically, she is, or one-woman show, I suppose. She is at this lake house, this sort of creepy lake house that her husband built for them. Yep. And it wouldn't be creepy. It's a very nice lake house.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
But it's creepy because you know it's a horror movie.
Right.
But her husband died, and you find out very quickly that it was a suicide.
Yep.
And then things start happening, like maybe it's haunted.
Well, everyone is like, do you know why he committed suicide? Did he leave a note? And she is like so frustrated about that and also at him for not like doing anything, telling her, And it's just kind of this sorrowful story that's tense and has some of the best sort of split cuts and
it's really creepy. It's very scary.
Great music note that the record that turns itself on.
But also Rebecca Hall's performance is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's also, I feel like, metaphorically a lot about like suicide and grief and depression and that kind of stuff. It's a really good. There's also Sarah Goldberg from Barry.
Yep.
Is in there and she's really good. And Vondi Curtis Hall plays her neighbor.
Yeah.
And he's got a really good part. But mostly this is a showcase for Rebecca Hall to play sort of a haunted, frustrated widow.
Yes.
And to sort of see the horrific things that were going on and why they were going on. And this reminded me of a Mike Flanagan movie in some ways. It was very character-driven. Yep. It was very spooky, but ultimately a little bit uplifting.
Yeah. The imagery is really kind of like a Flanagan, which you would expect.
Yeah.
There is, supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly recommend this one. It's such a good movie that I don't want to spoil.
Totally right. And the director did The Ritual, which I really liked, watched back in 2020.
I think this is on HBO, right?
Yes, I think it was HBO that I watched on. And also, the director is about to do Hellraiser that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
So
that definitely makes me more interested in Hellraiser because I'd forgotten that. So,
well, I'm looking. The thing is, I'm looking for my next Leigh Whannell because Leigh Whannell is not doing anything right now. So,
right.
If this could be the guy I can follow and watch his movies, that'd be great. The other movie I watched was The Forever Purge, which isn't technically a horror movie. They're more suspense action.
If you count Home Invasion,
that's where
Purge started.
They haven't been Home Invasion for quite some time.
It's spun off into its own little world.
The first one was sort of a horror movie. The rest of them have been more action-y.
Yep. But it's progressively gotten larger and larger as you sort of see the scope.
Yeah, and I think that's what I liked about The Purge is the notion of the sociological impact of The Purge is interesting. And so this one is The Forever Purge. It takes place in Texas and around El Paso.
Yep. And The Purge has just ended, if I'm not...
The Purge ends, as we watch, the Purge ends in mid-movie, and then there are a bunch of people called Forever Purgers.
Yeah.
And they have decided that the right-wing new founding fathers who created The Purge didn't go far enough, and that they're going to purge all the undesirables from society. There's definitely no parallels to the MAGA folks here at all.
No.
But our leads are sort of a ranching family.
Is it led by Will Patton is like the
Will Patton
the
is the patriarch, yeah.
Yeah, the patriarch.
But there's his sort of semi-racist son
is Joshua Lucas.
Yeah. Who has a pregnant wife.
Yep.
And then her sister, his sister, I think. And they have a couple of their ranch hands who are Mexican.
Yeah.
Who join up with them. And they all sort of have to make their way through the dangerous Forever Purging to try and escape America while it's
going back to Mexico sort of where they don't do the purge.
They don't do the purge, yeah. Yeah, Mexico and Canada like open their borders and there's a time limit to go get out of this country
Again is a nice little like world building thing for it. It's just like expands it even more. It's like okay.
But it's got entertaining bad guys, really great sort of tense action scenes.
Yeah, the action sequences are good. I think I went into this one with the lowest expectations. Reviews were rough, and I was like, I wasn't excited about it. I felt like The Purge had given me everything.
Yeah, yeah.
The Frank Grillo story arc.
Had resolved
and moved on from there, and The Purge had been, like, disbanded in a lot of ways in the last one because
that was the whole thing. There was a politician trying to undo The Purge. And then they, like, in the opening credits, they overwrite that. The new Founding Fathers come back into power. And by the way, again, I definitely can't see any real-world parallels to things having gotten better politically and then getting so much worse. There's no way. I can't think of how that happened in our world in any way.
So, weirdly, The Purge is one of those that shouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
I like it for what it is. This one fits right in with the others.
I agree. I never watched the show. I heard the show wasn't great, but now I don't even trust that either.
Yeah.
Like, maybe critics just don't get The Purge.
Maybe so. That first one, I think Dave recommended me watching it, and I was like, really?
Same. I think Dave put me onto it, too, and then I wound up liking the whole series.
But it's Ethan Hawke. And so, if you've never watched The Purge, watch that one and then see... Yeah.
And I honestly think it gets better. I think the second one with Frank Grillo is actually the strongest of the movies.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know what else. I've got some other stuff on the docket to watch the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I've got a few, but I didn't get a chance to watch anything other than Morbius this week. So.
Right. I made a mistake. Nick, you made a bad call.
I made a mistake.
All right.
Well, one second.
Yeah.
I will do a one-sentence plea to people.
Yeah.
Go watch Barbarian. Don't watch any of the trailers. Right. Go in as cold as you can.
Yep.
And you'll have a hell of a good time, because it was a blast.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one that's on my list for next year.
I'm still going to try to convince you to go to the theater. I know you don't do horror.
I go to the theater for horror.
But I feel like you should.
I wait till a year's come and I watch the best stuff that all my friends told me to watch.
I'm telling you right now, this is the best. The best horror movie I've seen this year.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, that'll wrap it up for us this time. And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.